Welcome to Torati Mecha Nafiomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Kaf Dalet, Chapter 24. This perek takes place at a very specific time in the history of the Korban, after Galut Yehoyachin, when King Yehoyachin was exiled to Babylonia after continuing his father Yehoyakim's rebellion. This exile, also known as Galut HaCharash VaHamasker, the artisan's exile, was not just another step in the process of bringing Bnei Yisrael closer to the Korban. Rather, it was a seminal event, almost a breaking point, in which the exile had really begun. Unlike when Yehoyakim was exiled by Babylonia, it was only the king himself who was taken, and then another king anointed in his stead. Here, the Psukim and Malachim explain, Yehoyachin was taken along with the royal family, the administration, the key people in the army, and the strongest soldiers, as well as all the craftsmen, the artisans. Clearly, Nebuchadnezzar was tired of Judean kings rebelling against him and was taking no chances. He wasn't going to exile only the king and his immediate family, but anyone who could possibly foment or support a rebellion. Anyone who had the leadership or military capacity to start a rebellion or continue it. This included the entire upper class of Judea at the time, and the blacksmiths who could form the weapons, artisans who could make vessels to take the war. By the end of this exile, only the poor remained in the land. Additionally, Nebuchadnezzar ransacked the Beit HaMikdash and carried away thousands of gold vessels. Some were kept intact and stored away, while others were cut up and used for their gold. This exile was a devastating blow to the people of Judea. There had never been an exile on their soil before. The only galut that they had experienced was that of the 10 tribes, who had never come back. Furthermore, the Nevi'e Sheker, the false prophets, had been saying the whole time that nothing was going to happen, and nothing could possibly touch the Beit HaMikdash. Here, the Babylonians had marched in and taken all that they desired. Clearly, the Beit HaMikdash was not impenetrable, and the idea that they had been holding on to as a security blanket was falling aside. So this was really a very terrible time in the history of the Jewish people. We're not at the Korban yet, but the exile has started. It is into this scene that Hashem sends Yirmiyahu a new vision, one that initially seems very clear, but then the explanation of the vision is the opposite of what you would think. Says Hashem to Yirmiyahu in Pasuk Aleph, Her'ani Hashem, Hashem showed me, v'hine shnei duda'ei te'enim mu'adim lifnei ha'chal Hashem, acharei higalot Nebuchadnezzar melch bavel et Yechonyo ben Yehoyakim melch Yuda, vet sarei Yuda, vet hacharash v'masker miyushalayim v'yve'im bavel. Hashem shows Yirmiyahu two baskets of figs that are sitting at the Beit HaMikdash after the exile of Yehoyachin and all of the artisans from Yerushalayim to Bavel. One of the baskets, Hadud Achad, te'inim tovim ma'od, beautiful, good figs, katine habakurim. V'hadud ha'achad, te'inim ra'ot, they were rotten and spoiled, asher lo te'achalna me'roa, that you would never eat them because they were so bad and disgusting. Hashem turns to Yirmiyahu and in an echo of Perek Aleph, chapter 1, asks him, Ma taro'eh, Yirmiyahu, what do you see, Yirmiyahu, deliberately playing on the language of Yirmiyahu's first vision of the olive branch? The almond branch. Yirmiyahu answers simply without explaining the vision, just as he did then. Va'omar, and I say, Te'inim, Te'inim, I see figs. Te'inim ha'tovot, tovot ma'od. The good figs are very, very good. V'ha'ra'ot, and the bad ones, ra'ot ma'od. They're terrible. Asher lo te'achalna me'roa, that no one would ever eat them. They're so bad. It seems clear what this vision represents. There are two baskets of figs in front of the Beit HaMikdash. For the first time in history, there are two communities of Bnei Yisrael separated into two cities. The exiles are in the city of Bavel, and the ones who remain are in Jerusalem. It seems clear that the spoiled grapes are the exiles, the people in Bavel, displaced from their homes, punished for their sins. This is the upper class, who had committed so many horrible acts, taking advantage of the lower class and committing so many sins against Hashem as well. The good and beautiful figs must be the people who are left in Israel, the ones who escaped the exile and remained in the land. They now have the chance to build a wonderful and just society and carry forward the principles that Yirmiyahu wanted to teach them. It's shocking, then, that the explanation that Hashem gives Yirmiyahu is the opposite, and Hashem explains the vision to Yirmiyahu in an exact parallel of Perek Aleph, where Hashem also explained the almond branch and the boiling pot to Yirmiyahu. Hashem says in Pasuk Hei, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, says Hashem, Ka'ateinim hatavot ha'ele, kein akir et galut Yehuda asher shalachti min hamakom hazeh, Eretz Kazdim Litova. The good figs represent the people who are exiled, the ones that I sent to Bavel. And what am I going to do to them in verse 6? Vasamti Einayalem. I'm going to keep my eye on them. I'm going to pay attention to them. Litova for good. Vashivotim al ha'aretz hazot. I'm going to eventually bring them back to this land, to Eretz Israel. Ubenitim. I will build them the lo eheros, and I will not destroy them. Unetatim, I will plant them the lo etosh, and I will not uproot them. And what am I going to do for them in verse 7? Venatati lahem lev lada'adoti. I'm going to give them a heart to know me. Ki ani Hashem, I am God. V'hayu li la'am, they will be my nation. V'anochi eye lahem le'elokim, and I will be a God for them. Yashuvu Eli Baholibam, they are going to return to me with their whole heart. These good figs are actually the people of Bavel, who Yirmiyahu says were exiled for a good purpose, to be in Galut, to be in exile and learn lessons there. He uses amazingly positive language about them, like Vahayuli La'am, Vanochi Ayelem, Lelokim, they'll be my nation and I will be their God. Words that are taken from Matan Torah. From Har Sinai, from the giving of the Torah, and also v'natatilem lev ladadoti, I'm going to give them a heart to know me. These are words of conciliation. These are words of love. These people will be built up in Bavel and eventually return to Eretz Yisrael when their exile is over. Now the opposite is true for the rotten figs. We thought the rotten figs must be the exiles, but Hashem says no in verse number 8. Kateinim haraot asher lo tochal meroa, those rotten figs that no one would eat. Ki ko amar Hashem, kein ateinu Tzidkiyo melech Yehuda ve'et sarav. That's what's going to happen to Tzidkiyo the king and his officers, ve'et sheirit Yerushalayim hanisharim ba'aretz hazot. The remnants of Jerusalem that are staying in this land, Hayoshvim be'aretz Mitzrayim, and the ones that are in the land of Egypt. What's going to happen to them in verse 9? Unetatim laza'ava l'ra'ah chol mamlechot ha'aretz. They're going to be a disgrace in front of all the other nations. L'cherpa, l'mashal, l'shnina, v'leklala, v'chol makamot asher dichem sham. They're going to be displaced. They're going to be cursed. They're going to be thrown around. And then in verse 10, v'shilachti bam et ha'cherev, et ha'ra'av, et ha'dever. I'm going to send them sword and famine and pestilence ad tumam until they're destroyed. Me'al ha'adama asher natati lehem ulavoteichem. From upon the land that I gave to them and their fathers. These rotten figs are Tzidkiyahu, the new king of Israel, and everyone with him. The people living in Israel are doomed. They will be chased and destroyed by enemies. Why is it that the forlorn people exiled to Babylonia are given such a positive vision? So it seems to be that this exile that was moved to Babel in the time of Jehoiachin is actually now the new center of the Jewish community. Even though there's still going to exist a community in Israel, the center of the community is in Bavel. This is the one that will have continuity. The book of Yechezkel actually begins at this time. The book opens with Yechezkel seeing a vision of Hashem's chariot. And the reason why Yechezkel sees Hashem on a chariot, as opposed to Yeshayahu, who saw Hashem sitting on a throne, on a chair, is because Hashem is moving. The wheels are turning. He's moving his presence from the Beit HaMikdash to Bavel. The book of Yechezkel starts right after Galut Yehoiachin because Yechezkel is one of the people who was exiled to Bavel. Yechezkel actually, in the beginning of his book, witnesses the center of Jewish spiritual life moving away from the Beit HaMikdash years before the Beit HaMikdash is actually destroyed. The movement of these Jews to Bavel follows this theme of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makdim Refuah LaMakah. Hashem always creates the cure before the disease. Hashem brought the community to Bavel to build up Jewish life there, so that when the devastation of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the exile comes, there's a place to go that already has people who have established religious life. And it's not just religious life that needs to be built up, but Galut is a type of corrective that is crucial for the people of Judea at the time. They have been living for so long with a misconception of what it means to serve Hashem and be righteous. Their religious worship has become a corrupted version of Torah ideals and idolatry, and ideology. It was ingrained into their philosophy that Hashem could never destroy the Beit HaMikdash, that ethics did not matter in terms of serving God, that Hashem was limited in a way and could not see all of their deeds. Galut needs to correct this. They need to see that, first of all, the Beit HaMikdash can be taken away. Hashem can see your deeds. They need to learn how to live without a Beit HaMikdash because they relied so much on it. They have to see that Hashem never needed the Beit HaMikdash. Hashem wants them to act properly, and only then will they be deserving of this Beit HaMikdash, when they show Hashem that they can act well even without it. And that's what it means when it says, V'natati lahem lev ladat oti, ki ani Hashem. I'm going to give them a heart to know me, because I am Hashem. Exile is actually the opportunity to come to true knowledge of Hashem. Only through the loss of everything that was dear to them, their homes, their lands, the Beit HaMikdash, knowledge of Hashem, as we discussed earlier in Yirmiyahu, is always following Hashem's example, acting ethically as Hashem does. If they take this opportunity, then it's not that Hashem will build them, but they will build themselves. They will become more moral. They'll become dedicated and humble people who can create an ethical society in which the Beit HaMikdash will only emphasize and crystallize the correct ideology that they already have and not bring them farther away. This misunderstanding of what the Beit HaMikdash means had pushed them so far away from Hashem that only by losing it could they start and rebuild a good and moral society. It's as if a kid is given a car by her parents, and her parents say, you know, we're entrusting you with this car, it'll help you get to your destinations quicker, but you have to be really responsible to drive a car. And what happens? The girl smashes the car. So the parents say, okay, we're taking the car away, now you have to ride your bike again. And you're gonna see that it's much harder to get places with a bike. But you have to show us that you're going to be responsible. And after a long time practicing on that bike, you will realize how good the car is, but you'll also realize that you have to be responsible. And that's what this is teaching them in Galut. They have to realize what it means to have a Beit HaMikdash, and they have to realize what it means that they can lose a Beit HaMikdash. And only then will they be motivated to really fix their ways. The people in Israel, on the other hand, are stuck in the same ideology that they've been living with for years. They don't have a massive change that's going to push them to reevaluate their religious philosophy. Zedekiah is a weak king, and he does nothing to challenge their misconceptions. He doesn't stand up to the powerful priest lobby or the false prophets who were actually still giving their prophecy, even after Jehoiachin's exile. This image of the rotten figs parallels a different pasuk earlier in Yirmiyahu. In Perek Bet, Hashem looked at the Jews and said, Anochi netaticha sorek, kulo zera emet. I planted you a pure seed, a seed of truthfulness. Ech nefachli sureya gefen nochriya. How did I get this grapes that I don't recognize? How did you become so different than the way I set you out to be? The rotten figs are the way B'nai Israel had turned out, unlike their mandate, unlike how they were planted, unable to be used for nourishment. Everyone keeps saying they can't be eaten. They're not fulfilling their purpose. These seemingly divergent paths of the figs, the bountiful basket of Bavel and the disgusting basket of Israel, though, are not as black and white as they seem. In order to understand this, we need to understand how tochacha and nechama work in Tanakh, how rebuke and comfort work. This is an idea that I heard from Rabbi Yitzchak Twersky. On the surface, tochacha, rebuke, seems bad, and nechama seems good. But if you look deeper, the ultimate nechama that we give to people is nechama velim, where we comfort mourners after a person dies. There's no room to heal anymore. There's no more therapies to try or medications, and therefore all we can offer is comfort, an outlook on the future, and an acceptance of the present. When tochacha is offered, when rebuke is offered, it means there's still time to grow, time to fix and change, a new therapy or an operation to attempt. Even if going through it will be painful, it's still an attempt at healing the patient. The people in Babel are exiled. Their punishment, like the hardened vessel, is set. There's no change possible. At this point, the only thing to do is to offer nechama, comfort, to show them a way forward, a way to use this opportunity to better themselves and make themselves worthy for the redemption when it comes. The people of Israel, however, are still getting tochacha. They get a very harsh message from Yirmiyahu, because you have to think about it in a different way, but actually they have a way forward. We're not comforting yet because them yet, because they're still in the land. They still have a chance to change their ways. And then the prophecy that Yirmiyahu says could just not come true, which is the goal of all negative prophecies. These two baskets of figs, one in Babel and one in Yerushalayim, are now on divergent and parallel tracks. This imagery helps us understand why Perek Kaf Dalid, chapter 24, uses the same language and format as Perek Aleph. Not only does Hashem use the same formula, showing Yirmiyahu an image, asking him what he sees, and then explaining it himself, but he also uses the same words of Yirmiyahu's job description: to uproot, to destroy, to build, and to plant. In Perek Aleph, chapter 1, Hashem told Yirmiyahu his job in 6 words: lintosh v'lintotz, l'avid v'laros, livnot v'lintoa. Your job is to destroy, to uproot, to build, and to plant. In Perek 18, when Yirmiyahu goes to the potter's house, another layer is added. Yirmiyahu's job will be shaped by Bnei Israel themselves. The amount of destruction versus building is in their hands. Here we have a third layer. To the Jews who reach Babel, Hashem says, Ubanitim v'lo eharos, unitatim v'lo etosh. I will build you and I will not destroy you. I will plant you and I will not uproot you. Once the deed is done, once the exile has taken place, now the rebuilding will start. To the Jews in Israel, however, Yirmiyahu says, Unatatem leza'aba, l'ra'a l'choma l'chot ha'aretz. You're going to be disgraced. Terrible things will happen to you. There's only destruction. The 6 words of Yirmiyahu's job are now being split in half. The 2 words of building now apply to the people in Babel, and the 4 words of destruction will apply to the remainder of the community that are in Israel. And that is only if they don't change their ways. Because perhaps if they do and they take a lesson from this basket of figs, then they can be built as well. In summary, Yirmiyahu sees 2 baskets of figs. One basket represents the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, that's the basket of rotten figs, and one basket represents the Jews in Babel, and that is the good figs. We're now on 2 parallel tracks after Galut Yehoyachin. There are 2 centers of the Jewish community, and we hope that each of them will choose well and each of them will make their figs good. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilo Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Zvi Yosef.